and welcome to the Press Start Podcast. This week on the show, we're discussing AI in games and the latest NVIDIA DLSS 5 controversy. Starfield coming to PS5, Jeff Kaplan's new game, and critiques of Nerd Baby Rage, and updates the Nintendo Switch 2 and PlayStation Portal. I'm your host, Ewan, and I'm joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, James.
Hello.
And Harry.
Hello.
This is our weekly video game discussion podcast. Let's get on with the show. In the week, NVIDIA unveiled the latest update to their upscaling technology, DLSS, embedding AI features that enhance photoreal lighting and materials. Before and after comparisons have been widely criticized for distorting the art direction of the game and imagining the appearance of character models. NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang has responded to the backlash, claiming developers have full control over the implementation of the technology and can adjust settings to ensure the AI enhancements match their artistic vision. James, first to you. What did you think of the tech demo that NVIDIA showed off?
I've not actually heard that statement before, but I think that's wrong. Like, that's factually incorrect. So, like,
you mean the statement from the CEO, Jensen Huang?
It's like the same art or whatever. Like, it's very different. So to answer your question, my first thought was this looks shit. Like, yeah. I didn't like the vibe. Like, it looks like when there was that period of people yussifying people, like, do you know what I mean? Back in the day on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like, I know, I mean, it kind of tells you where AI is at, that's kind of the images that we're pulling when, say, trying to, like, enhance someone's face in a game.
People were comparing them to, like, Snapchat filters and stuff like that. I think that's a fair comparison.
Yeah, like, it looked really cheap. And it looked shit, and I don't think it is in any way preserving the original artistic vision of the developer. I mean, maybe someone wanted to do that, but yeah, I don't know. I also think, I haven't obviously seen a game running in full with this shit over the top of it, but like, I also feel like that might look weird and a little bit uncanny, almost mobile game-like.
I wondered what that implementation might look like. Like, if it's... I think they're trying to say that it, like, reads the geometry of the face right and kind of, like, interprets what the look of the or what the artist sort of envisioned the character look like based on what information it's being provided from the character model. Again, I'm not really sure how this is all sort of working. But I think, like, the implication was that it was going to help bridge the gap between what the artist wanted to do and what they could do with the character model. Seems like a stretch to me, but I think that was kind of the claim they were trying to make.
I do think, like, obviously everyone's opinions are different with this kind of thing, for sure, and I think some people think certain things look better than others, hence why Gen AI in art has people like it. But I just think it looks terrible. Like, and I also think we run the risk of, you know, if the same... upscaling model is being used across every game, I don't think we're preserving the art style. I think we're almost homogenizing the art style by kind of running it through this filter. So I know, yeah, like, I know there are people, I think a lot of normies as well, like, probably wouldn't care about this as much, but I do think it makes games that do, it will make games that do something very different. Sorry, before I go ahead with this, when you do DLSS, I know I'm not a PC person, right? I know DLSS previously kind of, like, you know, gave you more space to get better performance out of your thing. So, like, this is like, this to me is like another level of, like,
I've seen that critique kind of thrown about as well. And I think that's another fair one that, like, previously. Well, like, when DLSS was first introduced, it was more about upscaling, like, rendering the game at a lower resolution.
Purely technical, right?
Yeah, and then...
Yeah, frame generation and upscaling resolutions.
Well, I think, multi-frame gen, or whatever it was called, was where it started to get a little bit problematic, because it was, like, helping fill the gaps between two real rendered frames
with ones
that were essentially kind of generative. It was, like, kind of taking the context of two frames and, like, bridging the gap to inject extra frames.
I mean, your brain does that anyway.
But this is the next level.
With your two eyes. I mean, I know that sounds like it's not the same. But, I mean, you know, that is biologically how vision works. So, like, I think that's an interesting comparison to make in a way. But the equivalent then to this is if I started hallucinating that my room looked like it was made out of a different material. Like, do you know, like if I just turn my head to the right a little bit or something. Like, I think this is a step further than just, you know, improving performance. This is changing the look of the game quite significantly.
I'm curious as well, like, how it works, given it's kind of responding contextually to the character model. Like, how do they maintain consistency from, like, scene to scene? Like, does it kind of keep the character looking the same in every scene, or does it kind of do things a little bit differently every time? Like, it's kind of hard to keep AI sort of consistent, right, when you're generating images. So I'm a little unsure about that. And I'm also like, what happens if it's, you know, a Tomb Raider game, and in one scene she's like going through a museum or whatever, she's nice and clean, and the next she's like fighting through the jungle and covered in blood and mud and stuff. Like, can it interpret all of that? Like, does it always kind of play into the right context? I don't know, maybe it does, but yeah, it's hard to imagine always working as well as they are kind of claiming it would. Harry, what do you think?
Yeah, I really hate
the technology given the opportunity.
No. And like the statements that like Jensen came out with, you know, saying devs have full control and, you know, it's how they, you know, they choose how it's implemented and whatever, like, obviously, a lot of that remains to be seen in the sense that, like, we don't really know how this is implemented and how devs will use it if they do use it. Why they chose, if that is the case, and it's, you know, can be drastically different from the way they showed it, why did they choose to show it in the way that they did? Like, I think the writing was on the wall that it was going to be poorly received. Like, and especially in the examples of, like, I don't know, the Requiem one just really shitted me for some reason. Like, why are we making
Grace doesn't even look like Grace.
Making her look like a bimbo? And it also completely undermines her character as well. Like, she's meant to be a timid, meek survivor, and we're turning her into, like, a supermodel. Like, what are we doing? Like, I don't understand. And in a way, it's, like, appealing to these grifters that we're seeing online who are saying that, you know, female protagonists should be hotter and whatever and so on, but... I don't know. I just think the whole thing is a bit nonsensical. I don't really see how you aren't undermining art direction and the hard work of devs and things like that. And I don't think, yeah, like homogenization, things like that. I don't think it is a positive at all. I've loved DLSS previously, you know, like the AI upscaling and frame gen and things like that. I think this is, definitely a step too far. Even if they have full control, like, how do we know it's consistent? And, I don't know. When I look at that photo of Grace, it's not Grace, and it's not Leon, and the Starfield one, it all looks so uncanny. Like, I don't know why we're trying to move towards realism when...
That Hogwarts, like, one
art direction
turns
will always be king.
The teenager into, like, a man. Like, and that's a bit...
looks
weird
going on
in the context of, like, Hogwarts Legacy. It's like this student looks like an old person.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't... Yeah, it's a bit odd. But I'm assuming, to be clear, again, I don't know much about this stuff, but you can't get the performance improvements that DLSS would traditionally give you with this, right? Like, this isn't like a kind of a checkbox you can't, like, opt out of that, right? Is that the
I assume it would be a checkbox. I hope it would be, because right now frame gen and upscaling are separate, so you can have one without the other.
And they're usually, like, customizable on a game-by-game basis.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the devs would usually have the technology in the settings screen for you to turn on and off.
If they were to make it so that, you know, it's an all-in-one package, they would be shooting themselves in the foot, I think. People will move towards, you know, AMD for cards.
Would they? Because isn't that, like, an expensive change to make? Because you have to change...
No, AMD's cheaper.
Oh, okay.
AMD is cheaper than NVIDIA cards. I'm talking about when people upgrade, you know.
Like, on I've got a 3000 series card. I don't think it supports DLSS 4. So that technology is kind of gated to the next tier. So I'd have to imagine DLSS 5 is reserved for the next generation of NVIDIA graphics cards. So I'm not sure if they've clarified that. Maybe it is coming to the current generation. I've been trying to kind of imagine a situation in which this could be an excusable, like, useful feature.
The only thing I could think about is, like, a game that's, I don't know, like, 2D and I don't want to say 2D, like, I don't want to smooth pixels, but, like, just making, blowing up an image that's quite small to be more vibrant and less sharp, you know? But then I think about those shitty 2D filters that Square ran over those Final Fantasy games years ago, and they looked terrible.
The one place that it kind of works, and they did show this off, was, like, sports games and racing games. You know, like, I think it's much less offensive. You're not seeing people's faces. And these games typically do strive for, like, hyper-realism in their visuals and things like that. I think that's fine and ish.
I was thinking maybe kind of NPC sort of, like, crowds, that kind of thing. So maybe, like, for example, if that's what you were alluding to.
Even that, like, Starfield shot was, like, haunting, the before and after of the Starfield. Yeah. I'm looking at that NPC and I don't want to play this. Like,
kind of character crowds. I think you mean, like, to the story. Like, crowds. Like, in the distance, Cyberpunk or whatever.
In, like, an Assassin's Creed game or something. Like, you might see all these, like, people.
If it's a character that you're, like, interacting with in the world, I'd kind of expect them to, you know, be crafted by an artist. But yeah, if it's just like a passerby in Night City or whatever, then I could maybe excuse it kind of, like, just improving the look of them.
I don't know, it depends. Does everyone in, like, Night City look like they've been filtered through Grok or ChatGPT? Like, get out, I'm not interested.
I'm playing Elon's Night City somewhat here.
Yeah.
James, maybe to kind of close it out, what do you think the uptake of this technology is likely to be amongst developers at this stage? I wanted to note as well, like, it's some reporting has emerged that I think from Tom Henderson, this was reporting from him, saying that some developers actually claimed that they had no idea that this was happening. And the first they heard about the technology was during NVIDIA's presentation. That's coming from some of the studios that are kind of included with.
I don't know about that, though.
As well. Yeah, like, I mean,
they're not going to chuck your name in a press release without somebody speaking to you first. Like, I don't.
Yeah,
I might believe that. Say, like,
the concern was that it was, like, higher ups at, like, you know, at a publisher level that were making these decisions as opposed to the studios themselves.
I think Tom spoke to developers specifically. Like, he asked for people, to reach out who probably wouldn't have had any say or indication that this was happening.
I think that is a concern. But James, the question to you, like, what do you think will be the uptake of this technology for devs, from amongst devs at this point in time? Can you see there being some interest in it?
No. I don't know. I think it depends. Like, I think if there's a dev who maybe is smaller and can't get that visual fidelity that, say, comes with more money or more investment on something, do you know what I mean? Like, AA developers or something. Sure, like, that might be appealing to them. But I think generally speaking, it all depends on how the tech is uptaken and what people react to it. But right now, based on the reaction, like, it's hard to gauge, because I think a lot of people also be like, I'm never going to fucking buy this, or I'm jumping ship to AMD right now. And then, you know, they still do, you know, like, talk is cheap. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We don't really know, right? I think for now, maybe, but I think long term, probably not. I think they'll have to, like, scale it back somehow. But then I feel like also Jensen doubled down with his comments afterwards, so it's hard to know.
Yeah,
where people go
and kind of put it back on everyone else. It's like, no, you don't understand.
Yeah, it's like,
you don't see our vision.
Yeah. Harry, do you think? Like, I've been grappling with this because there's lots of talk in AI, like, with AI integration in video games as well. Like, there was the concern that it would just, like, straight up generate assets or generate games from the get-go, where this is kind of, like, you can maybe make the argument that this is not doing that. It's just upgrading or, like, enhancing the work of artists rather than replacing them altogether.
I don't think enhancing or upgrading are good words.
No, it's very debatable.
Yeah.
Let me stress that. What does it tell you, though, I guess, about the direction the AI is heading in the game industry? And maybe the backlash to it. Does it help keep it in check?
I don't know. I think the backlash definitely keeps it in check. I don't think we'll ever be in a position where, you know, we have AI-generated games. We will be in a position where they exist. We won't ever be in a position where they sell or they're popular or they catch on. I just don't think people are interested in that. I just don't think they're going to be capable of creating an experience. Like, I understand that, you know, they have a place in pipelines, especially during, like, pre-production and things like that. And, you know, in technical aspects especially as well. But when it comes to like artistic intents, you know, designing mechanics, telling a story, yeah, I don't think, I think they will definitely try to find a place for it in the industry, but I don't think it will work out.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about like the magic of good game design, like when it hits and it just kind of captures you in surprising ways. Like sometimes good game design is the way it subverts expectations.
Yeah.
And I guess like all AI really serves to do is like kind of meet expectations. So
that's right.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if it does ever happen, like it'll be a long time from now. Yeah, I hope that human involvement still continues to play a major, major role in video games. Of the games shown off, Starfield was one of them. We mentioned it a little bit earlier. It was officially announced that Starfield is coming to PS5 in the week. It's coming out on April 8th with PS5 support, including a pro performance mode and a pro visual mode. Alongside the PS5 release, a new free Lanes update is coming, as well as a Terran Armada story DLC that's launching across all the platforms on the game as well. James, have you caught up on this update and does it interest you much?
No, I still haven't played Shattered Space. I think I own it too. Yeah.
Do you foresee yourself diving back into Starfield at
I mean,
all?
I probably should. I'm super enthusiastic. I don't know. I didn't love Starfield. I did like do a lot in that game. I spent a lot of hours in it, but I didn't really mesh with it as well as I thought I would, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think it brought to the surface a lot of issues that I have with like Bethesda games now. Bethesda's internal games, I should clarify. But yeah, I think I would be surprised if I jumped in now. I think there would be a lot of cool things added and stuff. But I just,
there's been a bunch of really good like quality of life improvements.
And it just kind of frustrates me that with a lot of these big games too, like they're just such different games by the time, you know, like these, so how many years has it been? I don't know. Like just, I know it's easier said than done, but like
four or something.
Classic 22. Example as well, right?
Like get it right the first time. But like, I don't think Starfield will have the length longevity of No Man's Sky as an example. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not in a rush to the way that I see it is like you kind of had your chance. Like I put in this amount of hour. I think I put 60-ish hours into it. Like you know, and I didn't, and I have no desire to go back to it. It's like,
I think we're in a difficult position as well, right? Where, like, I certainly feel the pressure to play current games, like games that are releasing this year, and kind of keep up with new releases as best as I can. So it's hard to carve out time I could be spent playing on a new release to go back and delve in something. And I kind of sympathize with you as well, James. Like, it'd be great if the year it came out and we're playing it for, like, Game of the Year conversations or whatever, it was its final form. But yeah, I mean, I do, given I haven't played Shattered Space either, given the kind of additions of this, even like the way that you can kind of travel between different planets now, and there are kind of like random activities that occur. It's not just like kind of traveling from A to B. There's things like that that just interest me a lot more, and it kind of sounds more like that kind of almost space pirate sort of fancy that I imagined it was going to be, on top of the quality of life improvements that I like have missed since it initially came out. It does have me tempted to go back in. How do you think it's going to do on PlayStation, Harry? Do you think it's likely to kind of gain a bit of traction, people take more interest in it?
I don't think so. I think people will check it out, but it doesn't seem like there's much fanfare around it. And I think you're right, like there's so much stuff out and coming out that people don't want to, you know, dedicate time to a release that's old unless there's something substantially new about it. Like, I think CDPR did a really good job with that with Phantom Liberty, right? Like, I think they sort of were able to really lure people back in with a banging DLC that obviously reviewed really well, but launching it alongside this massive overhaul of the game made it feel like it was something new and people were talking about it.
It's another example for me.
Will be the case.
Yeah, like, Cyberpunk is a game that I played quite a bit at launch. Not as much as Starfield, weirdly enough, but and I really do, and I actually want to go back to that, but there's just no time for me at the moment. Like, like Ewan said, I'm always playing something new or,
excuse me.
Yes. You're excused.
I sneezed. No, sorry, that on the microphone.
Yeah, like, it did a little bit. No, it didn't. So I just heard noise. But yeah, like, I don't, again, like, get it right the first time in a way. But I know that's easier said than done. And I know game development is hard, especially with the expectations of people, especially with these big open games and stuff. So I should acknowledge that. But at the same time, I don't know. Time is money, and I'm poor. So
I would like to get back to it, but I'm too busy playing Ghosts of Yotei Legends at the moment, is really good. Really good. Give it a go. If you played the Legends mode last time, you're going to continue loving this. We're going to take a quick break now, but be back in a moment to talk about Jeff Kaplan's new game and some of his interesting comments that he's decided to make as well.
Yeehaw.
Former Overwatch game director Jeff Kaplan has unveiled his latest game, The Legends of California, the debut game from his new studio, Kintsugiyama. The game is a multiplayer action survival FPS set on a reimagined waterlogged California during the Gold Rush era. I don't know if I've quite rephrased that correctly. They've imagined California as an island as opposed to the US state that it is. Harry, first to you. It's certainly a bit different from what he's worked on in the past, but The Legend of California, does it take your interest whatsoever?
No, but that's okay. I think like it'll find a crowd. Survival games always seem to, and I think if they're good, they do really well. Like we saw it with Valheim, and like there are other survival games that are really popular that people, you know, frequently come back to, V Rising, things like that. So I'm sure if it's well designed and it's a fun game, it'll take off. It's just not really my genre. Not that I think it looks bad or anything, but
yeah, it very much is my genre. But like they kind of really talked up the FPS elements of it an awful lot, and watching the FPS gameplay, I was like, that doesn't look good. That being said, I am kind of curious about like the setting, and I think like the fact that it's kind of got like a bit of a Red Dead Redemption sort of vibe to it as well. I mostly by way of the setting and the era, right?
It's a cool idea.
I think that's likely to capture some interest. I'm curious to see what that sort of means for the gameplay as well. James, you're famously not much of a survival game guy, so I imagine this is a pass from you as well.
I also hate westerns. Like, they just make me like...
It's a double whammy.
They're just like
it's a wombo combo,
big and dry, and they make me thirsty. I get really dehydrated when I look at them.
True.
I think I remember you saying exactly that when we talked about Red Dead.
I don't know. I get
too many tumbleweeds.
Like Red Dead, yeah, absolutely. Red Dead is huge, like, and I think people still play it, right? Like, I think it's a very good game, but that game does have an end, and I think this is maybe I can see people maybe jumping to this after that if they really. But then I also think part of the charm of Red Dead is, you know, the atmosphere and the world building and how it kind of brings you into that massive sprawling frontier or whatever. So I don't think you'll get that from this. My gut. I don't know why. I know this isn't a game for me, but I do feel like this is maybe slightly an overcrowded genre, and especially like these early access kind of dealios where they kind of launch and build it as people kind of experience it publicly. It's not my vibe. I'm not super into it. And I also think, I mean, we're gonna get into this later, but given I don't know if Jeff Kaplan has like the best, I mean, he's made like two good games at best, maybe, and how much of that success is his, but anyway,
yeah. let's bring that into the conversation now then.
Sorry.
Announcing the game, Kaplan also took the opportunity to criticize quote nerd baby rage and people getting upset that they decided to make this game that I have no interest in. We obviously spoke a little bit recently in the wake of Highguard as to kind of how people kind of just hate on games that they have no intention of playing, haven't played, haven't formed their own opinion on. I'm kind of with Jeff here, I think. I question some of the, like, his approach to how he described it.
I know what he's trying to say. I think the way that he's said it is probably not setting himself up for huge success.
The terminology was inflammatory.
With an audience that is traditionally quite fickle, and especially with a genre that is very, like, ride or die.
If you want to poke the bear and antagonize that particular like brand of gamer against your game, this is how to do it.
Absolutely. And now I think a lot of people, especially like the you know, rage bait grifter YouTuber audience, will probably watch this game now with a keen eye more so they can dance.
They'll be wanting to see it fail.
So they can dance on its grave, or like it's an early access game, so let's post some glitches to show how shit it is. Like, I think that was slightly unnecessary. And it's always interesting when these you know, developers from big AAA kind of step out into this indie space where they probably don't have a team to kind of control their marketing and PR speak, and they just like start with like a shit ball like this. So good luck to him. I don't have nerd baby rage. I'm maybe nerd disappointment, but not nerd baby rage. I do hope it works out well, because I think it would be quite scary to kind of create a new studio in this environment. But then I also think maybe you should try and do something a little bit more unique than
But that's... We spoke about this last time, so I'm hesitant to have like the same discussion again. But I guess to reiterate my point, when we spoke about this last, it was that like I kind of understand where people are coming from, in that they're concerned that the success of like multiplayer live service games, arguably this is that, means that they get fewer kind of single player narrative experiences that they prefer. I don't think he's really kind of engaged with the nuance of that at all.
Which I don't
get. Being said, there is like a subsection of gamers that love this kind of survival game. Like I am one of them. Maybe the setting doesn't do an awful lot for me, but Valheim, when it was all like kind of Norse, I loved that shit. I lapped it up. I think fans of this sort of series, like, or this sort of genre, do kind of get a little overlooked.
I just think there's this kind of this upward hill these games have to climb, where they're more successful if people are playing them lots and more regularly, but there's also a lot of them, so it's like there's just naturally
constant competition,
whereas like say a single player game, everyone can kind of just buy into that and play it and enjoy it and
put it down and be done with it.
We good, right?
Yeah. And then I sort of feel with survival games there's a little less like emphasis on the continuity of them. I mean, maybe that varies,
I feel like
I've always jumped in, had my fill for like 50 to 100 hours and then kind of tapped out, and plenty of people had done the same. There's often an upfront cost in the purchase of a survival game as opposed to like something strictly live service. I can't remember the last time I played one that was like kind of just free to play, and there was like passes and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, survival games nowadays, it's either they're live service or they're early access, right? Like it's true of any of them. I'm not really sure
how this will go. Which one's live service? Like, I'm trying to think of survival games.
Are you talking about live services in... I don't know, maybe we're
maybe not live service, but
I think we're conflating live service with, like, early access, where they drop content, like, every so-and-so. But I don't think that's... I think probably I should backtrack a little bit and say I think they drop content more because it gets finished, not so much they want to keep you playing. But, I mean... then they start chasing that growth monster, right? And that's also something that might not happen if everyone's kind of dipped and they're all going playing Big Walk now, as an example. Like,
yes, yeah.
In 6 months' time or something.
This conversation just reminded me that June Awakening still hasn't come to consoles, and really that needs to be rectified. If there's anything to be nerd baby rage about, it should be that, because I want to revisit that game.
Maybe they're holding it for the new movie.
Full release.
The teaser dropped, obviously, this week or whatever. So maybe they're trying to...
Or maybe they're holding it for DLSS 5.0 coming to consoles.
you have Timothy Chalamet in June Awakening.
I want to see AI a yassified sandworm.
All right, last little bit of news I've got for you today is some handheld updates. Nintendo dropped the latest Nintendo Switch 2 system update, adding a new handheld boost mode. The new handheld boost mode will allow OG Nintendo Switch games to run in TV mode on the Nintendo Switch 2, meaning that they can run at higher resolutions or frame rates in handheld mode. Hopefully that makes sense. I feel like I said the word mode and handheld about 50 times. Harry, useful update. Will you take advantage of this?
Yeah, I think this is a really sick update. It's so cool. Like, there are so many games that I can think of that I would like to revisit. Whether or not I do is another thing. But there are games that, like, I replay quite regularly that are Switch 1 games. Like, if I replay Metroid Prime, which I probably do, you know, once a year, I do it via remastered. So being able to play that handheld on my Switch 2 at, you know, a boosted resolution is, like, is really cool. Undisputed win. And then, like, even thinking about the Xenoblade games and stuff, like, seeing them get resolution bumps in handheld, really cool. And, you know, even just for anyone who didn't have a Switch 1 and has a Switch 2 and wants to go back and play some of the older stuff, like, yeah, I think it's really cool. Great idea. And I'll definitely get some use out of it one way or the other eventually.
Yeah. I can't say there's anything I'm, like, itching to play as a result of this, but I'm pleased that it exists as well. A new 1080p high-quality mode has also been released for the PlayStation Portal, enabling a higher bitrate compared to the default 1080p standard mode, promising a smoother and higher fidelity experience. James, will you be cracking out your PlayStation Portal again in light of this news?
Or I don't own a PlayStation Portal, Ewan.
Do either of you own a PlayStation Portal?
No.
No? Just me. I haven't touched the thing is way cooler. I've got some dust to blow off of it. Tell me about the Switch thing. James, which game are you?
No, there's nothing. No, I mean Resident Evil. Obviously, apparently the old ones apparently they look very good. But I think it's cool. I'm not somebody. I mean, I say I don't dabble in old games, but I'm literally playing like Fire Red right now and replayed all the Resident Evils last month. But you know what I mean. Like, I don't go back.
In fairness, you hadn't played Fire Red before, right?
Correct. Wow, someone's reading.
I read your tweets.
Reading all the shit that I put out into the world. That's one of yous. Yeah, so I don't dabble too much, but I think it's really cool if you do. And I think, like, maybe this will make Dread look good and Prime, potentially, because I know a lot of my friends have complained. I don't use handheld mode a lot either, so...
Really? Switch?
Really? Everyone, like gets so shocked when I say that.
I, almost exclusively use it.
Yeah, I reckon I'm, like, 65-35 probably in favor of handheld.
If I'm not in front of my TV... Yeah, right.
Sorry, so specific, yeah, that, isn't that's it? Oddly specific. Like, it's not 70-30, but it's not 60-40, you know?
32.57% yeah, right. of the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. If I want to play a game, I want to sit down and play it at a TV. Like, the only time I use handheld is on a plane, I think, or a train.
I mean, I sit on my couch and play it handheld. Nah, just like...
I can't. Although, like, I... yeah, I don't know. I just... because the only way I'm on a couch playing a video game, I'm at my house, right? So then I can just go upstairs to my TV. Like, that's, I don't know. I know that's weird. I feel like everybody plays their Switch handheld.
You've got a big screen in front of you and it plays the game better. So you're kind of, it's a very valid point.
And a sound system and do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I do think for me with the Switch 2, I've definitely... play it more docked than I did the Switch 1 just because of fidelity output and things like that. Like, you know, especially games like Donkey Kong Bonanza and all that, like, they look so good in docked. So, yeah, I do think there is, you know, more merit to it with this console as opposed to the first Switch.
In saying that, I'm getting onto a reasonably long flight on Sunday, and I cannot wait to just play Pokemon Pokopia the whole time. It's going to be great. I have a rapid-fire question for the two of you before we move to What the Wiki. I feel like there's a lot of games coming out at the moment, so I did want to just check in. What are you all playing? Harry, what's your game you've got on the go?
I finished Mugenix last week.
Well done.
After, like, 100 hours. That's probably my front-runner for Game of the Year, to be honest. But currently Slay the Spire 2, which is in Early Access. It's fantastic. And a lot of Marathon, which really surprised me, to be honest. I'm really loving it.
Play some Marathon together.
I'm having a great time. Like, once it clicked, I really started enjoying it. And then I unlocked Outpost, which is like the third launch map. And holy fuck, it's so good. That map is so good. And there's another one coming like next week or something. So yeah, I'm really loving it. Really enjoying it way more than I thought I would.
Yeah. I mentioned it earlier, but playing a fair amount of Ghost of Yote Legends with that having dropped. That has kind of pulled me away from Marathon, so I'm keen to get back to that too. And yeah, Pokemon Pokopia has surprised me with just how much I love it. Traditionally not like much of an Animal Crossing guy, but it's just fun.
It's an easy play.
Squirtle, run about, get there all humid for you. It's great. James, Pokemon 2, right?
No. Pokemon Fire Red. I played Pokopia and I was like, I don't like this, but I like Pokemon sometimes, so I'll try Fire Red, and it's got me. So, yeah, not much coming out.
It's the first Pokemon game I've bought in forever.
While we're here,
Pragmata and Saros next month, but
yeah, while we're here though, Saros. What are we? What's the vibe for Crimson Desert?
I did wonder if this was going to come up.
I just thought about what I'm playing next, that's... Oh, what are your thoughts?
I always kind of thought that when this game was showcased, it looked very surface level and shallow. A lot of flashy stuff, but nothing that looked very substantial. And it seems like a lot of the reviews echo that sentiment where, you know, it's ocean wide, but an inch deep. And that's
it feels like one of those games where somebody films a 20-second clip of something and tweets it and says, this is why AAA games are dead, or like Western AAA is dead. And then like it's just a clip of someone like, I don't know, like catapulting themselves off a tree. And then you're like, cool. So for that 10 seconds, for that 10 seconds, that's fun. But how does that... I don't know. Maybe I'm being... I want to give it a shot because I'm interested in the critical divide in it.
It wasn't really on my radar, but yeah, kind of like you, James, like the more there seems to be like a bit of a discourse emerging about a game, the more I'm like intrigued to play it. Maybe that's because we like forming our own opinions on games. All right, let's play What the Wiki, the Pressed Up podcast game show. The previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page from an unknown game, and we, the contestants, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, with the round ending after someone's bagged themselves 2 points. Currently in the lead, we have James on 11 points. Shannon's in second on 7 points. Harry and Brody are tied on 5 points in third place. That means I am bringing up the rear with just 4 points. How the mighty have fallen. I had such a strong season last year, and it just went to shit at the end, and that trend has continued. But as last week's winner, James is in the hosting chair today.
Okay. Listen hard, Ewan. Okay. Especially Ewan.
It's not the listening part that lets me down.
Yeah, it's a comprehension issue, I think.
It's the memory part. Comprehension. No, don't, because you're tarnishing me with the same brush that Shannon rightfully deserves. Shannon doesn't pay attention. I pay attention. I just lack the encyclopedic knowledge that this game requires and memory.
Okay. Well, let's go. Maybe you don't need to remember too much with this one.
Okay.
The game is developed by Scottish studio Blank. The game was first revealed in a 2022 teaser trailer. Yes,
no, maybe. Hitlin.
Wow, this is really cocky.
Is this Silent Hill Townfall?
Oh my god, it is.
Let's go!
Who would have ever fucking thought?
Scottish contingent, let's go.
Absolutely. Scotland mentioned. Okay, so Ewan won. Harry none. This game is inspired by chase scenes featured in Casino Royale and the Bourne films, and features hundreds of first-person animations to convey the main character's movement and interactions with the environment. Although the game is powered by Unreal Engine 3,
Ewan? Oh, shit.
Yes, Harry.
Is it Mirror's Edge?
It is Mirror's Edge. Congratulations. Wow, you guys...
I was just waiting for, like, a date to, like... Or something to date it.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was Mirror's Edge or Catalyst, but Unreal 3 gave it away.
Yeah.
Okay, this will be... I don't know how this will go, actually. Development for this game began in 2008, and it was announced in 2009 as part of an already existing series, but was cancelled by the publisher in 2011 as a result of the project's delays and budget issues. 6 months later, however, another publisher purchased the publishing rights and retitled the game. The game features a large cast, including celebrities Lucy Liu, Emma Stone, Yoon-jin Kim, Robin Shu, and Kelly Hu. The game is an action-adventure game set in an open-world environment and played from a third-person perspective. The players control a main character, a police officer, who goes undercover and ventures out on a raid to infiltrate a criminal organization.
Harry.
Yes, Harry.
Is it Sleeping Dogs?
It is Sleeping Dogs. I'm so sorry, Ewan.
Well done, Harry.
I just got that.
The rapid rise of Harry this season. Wowee.
Emma Stone is in Sleeping Dogs. Wow.
She is. She's one of the girls you can date.
Yeah, okay. What a game. Incredible game.
Harry, just on the rapid ascent, shot up to second place now, 7 points, tied with Shannon. Bravo to you. I'm pleased to pick up a point there and get back into kind of contention. 5 points tying me with Brody. James, as today's host, though, you do get a trivia question. I haven't forgotten for once. And I have 3 questions prepared for you that you can pick from. The themes of today are Pokemon, Fire Red, Reanimal, or Return to Silent Hill.
This is so fucked.
3 things you've been tweeting about recently.
I'm being tricked.
It's got to be Return to Silent Hill. It's got to be Return to Silent tricked. Hill.
Yeah, let's go. Oh, I didn't really take that movie in, though, so I don't know.
Neither did I, but I still remember
let's
much of it.
Let's go Return to Silent Hill. Why not? Some promo.
Locked in.
Not sponsored.
Well, we know it needs
it. Here's the question for you. Evie Templeton, who plays Laura, also performs the voice and motion capture of Laura in the 2024 game remake Silent Hill 2. According to director Christopher Gans, this casting was because A, it was insisted upon by Capcom, B, it was designed to ensure the character looks the same. Sorry,
is that a trick answer? Do you mean Konami?
I meant Konami, sorry. C, because he was so impressed by her performance in the game, or D, it happened accidentally.
What was B?
B was it was to ensure that the character looked the same.
I reckon it's D, it was an accident.
D, it happened accidentally, is the correct answer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Apparently she was under NDA, and so couldn't reveal that she was playing the character in the game, but was nonetheless cast as her in the movie.
Fun fact, the same thing happened to Lily Gow. She played Ada Wong in the Welcome to Raccoon City movie, and then she was cast as Ada Wong in the RE4 remake. So fun
there you
times.
Go. Do you want any of the other questions? Just for
sure, why
geeks?
Not? Just hit them. Hit them.
Seeing as I wrote them, we may as well use them, right? Pokemon. Which of these 4 Pokemon were not exclusive to Pokemon Fire Red, but to Leaf Green? You have to tell me which one was not exclusive to Fire Red. Do you reckon you could do this? I'll give
just
you the 4.
Give me.
A, Psyduck. B, Slowpoke. C, Growlithe. Or D, Elekid. I hope I pronounced them correctly.
I reckon Elekid.
That's the incorrect answer. It was Slowpoke. Slowpoke was exclusive to Leaf Green, not Fire Red.
But I have a Oh, no, I don't. Okay. Yeah.
And then your Reanimal question was the collector's edition of Reanimal contains a statue of which animal? Is
pig.
It A? It's a pig. Well done, James.
Wow.
Well.
2 out of 3 is pretty good going. Very well done. But with that, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener, the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at press.com.au. We've been joined today by Harry.
Yes, you can follow me on socials at Harry_Callow.
And in the What the Wiki hosting chair today and nailing the trivia, it was James.
You can follow me on Twitter at JamesATJMZ and on Blue Sky.
And I've been your host, Ewan. You can follow me across socials at Ewan_Roxburgh. We'll be back again next week. But until then, happy gaming.
Bye.
Bye. I was waiting for that. So bye.